This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I think this is episode 599. Yes, I think it's 599. So next week, 600. Anyways, all is well. Everything's kind of puttering along. We're doing good. We had Uncle Sam Day last week, and I went down to the dentist last week in my little Uncle Sam costume. And Uncle Sam Day, I can't remember if I mentioned this last week, but I had looked up Uncle Sam and the history of Uncle Sam, and there was a political cartoonist named Nash. In the late 1800s, 1860-ish, 70-ish in there, that really kind of popularized Uncle Sam. And Uncle Sam was, in fact, kind of the confused American government that wasn't really sure what was going on, that he had the kind of goddess Columbia was his symbol of all that was good about America. And then Uncle Sam was just sort of this upset, didn't know what was going on, was trying to figure things out. Well, some of those cartoons are pretty racist. So the joke was, this time, was that I was doing a little modernized version of Uncle Sam. The joke last year for this was that I wanted to do Uncle Sam dressed exclusively in products from China. All of that to say, the way it ended up was, you know, sequined blue coat with sequined vest, you know, some fascinators for a hat, that sort of thing, and bunny ears, silver, blue, and red bunny ears, sparkling bunny ears, and red and white striped Pippi Longstocking socks. And as long as you're doing the Pippi Longstocking socks, then you might as well do the Pippi Longstocking hairs. So it was the red auburn wig that my daughter helped me put a wire on so that I had pigtails that were going out in both directions, and then had the American flags in them flying so that I could shake my head and fly the American flags. So, you know, a good time was had by all. So that was fun. And I did go down to my dentist that way because they got a big kick out of it. They get a big kick out of it. And I was advised earlier in the week, I mentioned this last week, I was advised that if I wanted to come down in costume, I was more than welcome to do that. So of course I did. And everything, thought it was funny. Everybody thought it was funny and it was fine. Well, of course, I can't get my teeth cleaned with that wig on with it sticking out in all directions. So I did have to pull all that stuff off, got my teeth cleaned. And then my dentist said, yeah, I said, well, I'm going to have to put the stuff out. Yeah. Can you go put this stuff all back on? Because then we'll take pictures. Okay. So went back into the bathroom, put all the stuff back on, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Got that all taken care of. And you know, sure enough, we got pictures taken and all was well. So it was fun. Everyone seemed to enjoy it. And then last weekend, I think I mentioned last week on the podcast that I was just a little discouraged with the Grammarly check. But I did get that done. Is it Thursday night? No, I think I finished up on Friday, maybe? Because there were so many to check. I think I got close. I think I got within. I just had the epilogue left to do, and so I did that Friday. And then I got everything laid out on Friday, and then launched into working on the cover. And, you know, had things pretty well squared away. By Saturday, I knew I was close on Saturday, and so I called, you know, texted my daughter and said, hey, how about the kids for this evening? Because I like to take pictures for the cover when it's getting a little late in the day because the light's better. We don't really have a golden hour out where we are. There's too many trees. So by the time you get the sun down to the point where you get that really glorious gold tones on everything, the sun's behind the trees. But at least you do, you know, you can control the shadows a little more. So, and when the sun's a little lower in the sky, and the way all the shadowing was working out, the sun needed to be a little lower in the sky. And so we got that done, got those things shot. And then Sunday I went ahead and cut all that stuff in and got the cover done over the weekend and got all the files uploaded, got the beta copies ordered. So I'm recruiting beta readers at this point. I think we're fine. I'm somewhere around 19 or 20, and I've only ordered 25 beta copies. So, you know, we're fine. Got that taken care of. I used to do 40, but this is book 13. It's pretty hard to get people to come along and come in, even though I do have enough that theoretically people could jump in at this point. But yeah, I crossed the boundary. I didn't realize I had crossed the boundary until I added in the word and page counts. And I think the word count, I know for sure the word count is I'm at 2 million words at this point. So including this book, book 13, there's been 2 million words so far, and it's somewhere around, I think it's over 5,000 pages. I can't remember. Yeah, I think it is. I don't know. So it's over 5,000 pages. I think it's 5,200 or something like that. Anyways, so yeah, so there's a great deal of pontifications going on there. But I'm just trying to get some costuming things done really quickly. I need to build a ruffled apron tonight. But once I get that done, then tomorrow morning I'm planning to launch into book 14. So all is well. All is well. We're just puttering along. Tomorrow is Talk Like a Pirate Day, so that should be fun. I've got some visual aids to help people remember pirate phrases, so it'll be cute. I think it'll be cute. It's just a standard pirate costume from Amazon, so it's kind of a, you know, coasting week, but there's some cute stuff there. And then next week, I think it's comic book day next week, and I've actually got a full Flash costume, kind of the classic Flash costume. But I also have my t-shirt that has the sloth on it who is wearing a Flash costume, which is one of my favorite t-shirts that I have. So that should be fun. People usually get a kick out of that t-shirt. It should be fun. So all is well there. Things are, you know, really just kind of puttering along. And I don't think there was anything of great note with the costume last week when I was puttering around. You know, people seemed to enjoy it. We had a few laughs, and, you know, that's what that's all about. I am really happy to get book 13 landed, get it landed on time. The books won't actually be in until, I think it's October 1st or October 2nd, so I'm a couple of days off, but I'm not far off, and in fact, I would be closer if it wasn't for the fact that CreateSpace is now being processed by Amazon.com. Back when I was using CreateSpace.com, which is defunct now, I would order these books and the turnaround time would be like a week. I could get them in, especially if I sent them like secondary air. I could get them in a couple of weeks and just done and done, you know. And with Amazon, probably because they have more people doing this, obviously, it's 2 weeks now. So I have to kind of back time that all in. because this particular book, the fall book, which isn't quite fall, but the fall book, I like to have that in the hands of beta readers no later than the last week of September, since I pushed the deadline to have everybody get it back into me on November 15th, because I'm trying to get it to happen before Thanksgiving. Because I have found that if it happens after Thanksgiving as far as a due date, yeah, forget it. You're just, it's not going to happen. You know, you get it in people's, or people are supposed to send it back to you December 1st, forget it. It's just not happening. So if it's November 15th, then, you know, you stand a fighting chance of getting it back in. And then also that gives me a chance to get the book and production copies all done and have a week off at Christmas then, which I don't usually end up taking a week off. I take a couple of days, but I usually just turn around and start back into the next book. But, you know, that's okay too. So I'll be close. I'll be close. At the very latest, I like to have the beta books in the reader's hands by October 1st for the fall. But, you know, it'll be close, because I'll probably mail them on October the 3rd, and so they'll have them 4th and 5th and 6th, and yada, yada, yada. So, anyways, and then we'll see how people like this one. It's interesting, because I did have a conversation with a friend this morning when we were at breakfast, and I very much understand kind of the flip side of the movie Cuties, because we got talking about the movie Cuties, which is on Netflix, that he had watched, and, you know, we got talking about it. There's a lot of railing going on right now about people being aghast at the movie Cuties, and thankfully, I had actually heard a commentator do a fairly in-depth review of the movie, having watched it. And what we discussed this morning at breakfast is, I haven't seen the movie, but from what I got of this reviewer and my friend who had watched the movie agreed, is that there was a legitimate problem that the director of the movie was trying to illustrate. And for those of you who don't know, the movie Cuties is actually about an 11-year-old girl who is kind of making that transition, starting that transition into womanhood, and is getting a lot of the cues from what it means to be a woman, what it means to be a young woman, from social media, which of course is the wrong place to get things. And so they're, at the same time, this young lady is part of a Muslim family, and I guess her dad has gone back to Sudan to get his second wife and bring her over. So you've got all this kind of conflict between religious fundamentalism and how that approaches womanhood, et cetera, et cetera. And then this conflict with social media. And the influences that would seek to have. And from what I understand, the director of the movie is very concerned about social media's impact on our young women who are passing into puberty and going through their teenage years, and the influences there, and how everything is so oriented towards appearance and sexual expressions when, you know, these are just little girls. And so the movie has a point to make, but as my friend and I were talking, you know, the difficulty is that as the director of the movie, or in my case, as the teller of a story, you're trying to figure out where that line is, where you're trying to put people into the moment of the story and get a visceral response from them so that they will remember what you're trying to convey, without turning people into voyeurs. And it's a very difficult line, because everyone has a different line. And I was telling my friend that I've got one beta reader who's a very conservative woman, and her reviews of my books will typically be, well, there were some really gross spots in it that I just had to force myself to get through, but overall I enjoyed the book, because those sections are in there not just to be gross, those sections are in there to convey the ideas I'm trying to convey, so that when I get to the this is the point of this book, or this is one of the points of this book, you have a real connection to what's happening there. And you know, I know that if people would take things out of context or just snapshot certain portions of my book, and that's all people would realize out of my books, people would wonder what's wrong with them. As one of my beta readers, who had been a beta reader, who then started in on this series, and I had warned everybody that this Windfall series is earthy and gritty, and he started in on this, and he was very concerned for me, because he didn't, you know, he said, I'm really concerned, are you okay, because this is just not your style. And I thought, well, yeah, yes it is, because of the topics that I'm wanting to cover in this. But you know, people get offended, which is fine. We all have our different levels of offense. And what's interesting is that this one particular reader that I have, I would not have expected her to come back for another serving of it, and yet even with that, she comes back because she finds the messages of what I'm trying to say powerful enough, and the expressions of the emotions powerful enough, that she's willing to slog through the other stuff. And you know, my job as a story writer is to not be capricious, is to not necessarily be trying to turn my readers into voyeurs, but trying to put them in the moment, and then to have them consider how they would behave in those moments. Because maybe then you get, that's a, you know, dry run for, if you are in something that is even remotely similar, you have a chance, you've simulated it in your mind, and your responses can be better than perhaps some of the responses that the characters take in my books. Which, I've said that one of the reasons I write is that I write my world. I write to rehearse conditions and situations so that I can figure out the best way to respond to things. And speaking of figuring out the best way to respond to things, this is an interesting time. This is very, very interesting. And what I was chatting, one of the things I was chatting with my friend about this morning, is that we have a great opportunity right now in the middle of all this stuff. We have a great opportunity to determine how we are going to react to things. I think this Cuties movie is a great example of this. A lot of what people are doing with the Cuties movie is they are looking at one clip from the movie, or simply hearing about one clip from the movie, passing judgment, and then railing on social media about that. What made me decide that I wanted to talk about what I'm going to talk about today was the fact that I have a friend, and I won't name him, and there's no way for you to know him, who is vehemently opposed to masking. Okay, that's his privilege. Very opposed to masking. to the point where Springfield, Missouri, where I live 8 miles north of Springfield, has a mask ordinance that if you go into a store, you're supposed to be masked, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And he doesn't believe in that. Okay, that's fine. That's his privilege. So he posted on Facebook, apparently. I didn't see the initial post. He posted on Facebook that he had decided that he was not going to support any Springfield business because he would be required to wear a mask. We have a neighboring town just to the south of us called Nixa. Nixa does not have a mask ordinance. And he had determined, and he mentioned this on his Facebook post, that what he was going to do was that he was going to drive to Nixa, do his shopping in Nixa, do his gassing up in Nixa for his car, and that was the decision he had made. Well, okay, that's fine. You know, we all get to choose, and obviously I didn't have any problem with that. Apparently, though, once he posted that, someone investigated, did not respond to him directly on social media, but investigated, found his phone number, sent him a text message on his phone, you know, this screed filled with profanity about, you know, what a quote-unquote worthless piece of whatever he was, that he would do this. Now, obviously, you know, that type of behavior is not great. Then my friend turned around and reposted on Facebook his own diatribe, including, you know, what's wrong with these people, blah, 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 blah. And the problem here is there is a lack of understanding of the dynamics of what's happening and when we're doing this, when we're posting these screeds about things like cuties or about mask wearing or about people's responses to our post on mask wearing, and there's all this contention that's going on, I think we are missing fundamentally the dynamics of what are happening. And even though I've talked about this before, I'm going to talk about it again because it's important. All of us are at war with the flesh within us, and the spirit within us is warring against the flesh. We are all in this war. And just in case we have forgotten how we know whether or not our responses are flesh-driven or spirit-driven, Paul very clearly lays out in Ephesians 5. And I'm going to read it again because it's important. So starting with verse 16, "So I say, let the Holy Spirit guide your lives, then you won't be doing what your sinful nature craves. The sinful nature wants to do evil, which is just the opposite of what the spirit wants. And the spirit gives us desires that are opposite of what the sinful nature desires. These two forces are constantly fighting each other. So you are not free to carry out your good intentions. But when you are directed by the Spirit, you are not under obligation to the law of Moses." In other words, Paul is saying, look, there's a war within you. And other translations talk about the fact that the flesh wars against the Spirit and the Spirit wars against the flesh. And Paul makes it clear here that unless you're living in the Spirit, you're really just going to be tossed about by your flesh. It's just going to take you by the nose and lead you. And as I've mentioned in the past, the flesh leads us by stirring up our emotions, and it stirs up our emotions by lying to us and lying to us about our self-concepts. Oh, that person just did that because blah, 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 blah. Okay. Now then, Paul, rightly so, goes on to describe what the works of the flesh are. So he says, when you follow the desires of your sinful nature, the results are very clear. So there shouldn't be any question in our minds when we look at our responses that if any of these descriptors fit your responses, fit your behavior, that's flesh. Period. It's flesh. Okay? So the first part of this, we're usually pretty good about saying, well, I'm not doing that, but keep listening. So Paul says, the results are very clear. Here are the results. Sexual immorality, impurity, lustful pleasures, idolatry, sorcery, hostility. Now, up to that point, up to before we get to hostility, we all think, oh, I'm doing okay. But listen to the rest of this. Hostility, quarreling, jealousy, outburst of anger, selfish ambition, dissension, division, envy, drunkenness, wild parties, and others. Now, I think, you know, there's most of us are going to say, well, I'm okay with drunkenness and wild parties. I don't do those. But that middle section, hostility, quarreling, jealousy, outburst of anger, selfish ambition, dissensions, division, and envy, those are works of the flesh. And you have a choice in your life whether you're going to embrace the flesh or embrace the spirit and or follow the flesh or follow the spirit. And in my mind, guaranteed, if you follow the flesh, that puts you on a course of destruction. You might not see it immediately, but if you continue to follow the flesh, that puts you on a course of destruction. Just like if you follow the spirit, that puts you on a course of life. And Paul goes on to describe what your behavior will be like, what you will manifest if you are following the Spirit. He says, but the Holy Spirit produces this kind of fruit in our lives. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. And Paul says, there's no law against these things. Those who belong to Christ Jesus have nailed the passions and desires of their sinful nature to his cross and crucified them there. Since we are living by the Spirit, let us follow the Spirit's leading in every part of our lives. Let us not become conceited or provoke one another or be jealous of one another. In other words, Paul is saying, look, all of that tendency towards destruction, towards losing the battle with the flesh, that is all nailed to the cross. You can walk away from it. Because it can't get to you unless you go to it. That's important. You have to give it space in your life. Now, let's talk about the dynamics of what's going on here with my friend. So first of all, he's all upset about the masking ordinance. All right, well, there's nothing to be upset there about. I've talked to other friends about this. Well, the government's going to take over, and the government's going to do this, and the government. Okay, well, maybe. But by the same token, you know, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's and unto God what is God's. Okay, you know, if the city wants me to put on a mask, I'll put on a mask. It's not that big of a deal. And I'm certainly not going to be railing about it on Facebook. How does that showcase the gospel of Jesus Christ? How does that fall into this language of love, joy, peace, long-suffering, goodness, kindness? Where does that fall in? So in the first place, we got a little problem there with my friend because he's giving vent to the flesh. And obviously, the person who's finding his cell phone number to send him this screed by text is giving vent to his flesh. But let's say that my buddy didn't do anything wrong. Let's say that my buddy was just puttering along, and this someone sends him this screed because he's offended by something. What's the dynamic that's happening there? The dynamic that's happening there is this: that other person's flesh has a hold of them and is trying to manifest as much destruction as it can. So it's not only leading this person down a path to destruction, because you cannot isolate and encapsulate the flesh in your life in only one area. If you manifest the flesh in one area of your life, it will spill over into other areas of your life. It will spill over into your relationships. People who think they can get online and be trolls online and be ugly to everyone else online, and they think they can just shut off the computer and walk away from it. Not true. Because it will spill over. All right, so there's destruction going on in this other person's life. Because the flesh has them enough, they get this person to send this screed via text message. Now, why is the flesh in them promoting the sending of this text message? The reason that it's promoting the sending of this text message is that it is hoping that it will stir up the flesh in the other person, because it not only hates the person that it's in and tries to bring as much destruction as it can to that person internally, it's trying to spread that destruction to everyone else because it hates everyone else as well. The flesh is unredeemable in us. All we can do is nail it to the cross. And it will seek our destruction and the destruction of every single person that we encounter. So now my friend is on Facebook. Now my friend is checking his phone. He gets this screed. What does he do at this point? Well, if you understand the dynamics of the flesh and spirit, you look at that and you go, wow, a whole lot of destruction there. Now the question is, am I going to draw that destruction into myself, or am I going to do something else? Now, some people will tell me, well, you know, but I just can't help it. I just can't help it. I just get so mad. Well, I've mentioned this before, but here's one of these concrete tools that you can use. Blessing, the power of blessing. It's an amazing thing. So when you get this screed text message, and this guy on the other end is calling you a blankety blank this, blankety blank that, blankety blank the other, what we have the opportunity to do at that point is to start blessing. Father, I don't know what's going on in this man's life. I don't know why he found it was necessary to chase down my cell phone number and send me this text message, but I just ask right now that you will bless him. If he's a father, I just ask you to help him be the best possible father he can be to his children. If he's a husband, I just pray that you'll help him to be the best possible husband that he can. Whatever his job is, whatever his work is, I just ask that you'll bless him at work, that you'll give him wisdom as he goes in each day, that you will help him to prosper. This is what Jesus told us to do. Bless those who curse you. This is the gospel. This is the true gospel. This is Sermon on the Mount stuff. This is our opportunity to reflect this. Because what that does is when you bless like that, it's an amazing thing, especially you do it out loud and you mean it. All of a sudden, you will feel the Spirit coming in to that space. And that flesh and all that, it will just evaporate. Now, I will tell you another little story. I'll call this story fictitious. I'll say it's an example. Maybe it is fictitious. Maybe it's not. Maybe it happened recently. Maybe it didn't. let's say that there's a Friday night football game and there's a bunch of girls. We're going to go to this Friday night football game. And one of them happens to be wearing a Make America Great t-shirt or hat or something. Doesn't really matter. They're at this game. There's another group of girls that start, you know, throwing insults simply because of that t-shirt, start calling them names, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the first group of girls decides they're just going to leave. So they get down, they start leaving and start walking out. Second group of girls starts following them out, calling them names. And then we'll say that the second group of girls start accusing the first group of girls of using the N-word and throwing the N-word at them. And then on the basis of that false accusation, the second group of girls, one in particular, starts wailing on, you know, gets her down on the ground and starts wailing on the girl in the first group of girls who's wearing the Make America Great Again t-shirt or hat. Doesn't really matter. This is our opportunity to be the Church of Jesus Christ. This is our opportunity. Because what did Jesus say in the Sermon on the Mount? Turn the other cheek. If someone compels you to go 1 mile, go 2 miles with them. That's what the gospel truly is. How do we get there? I think blessing is one way to do it. I was talking to my friend this morning. He said, okay, but if you're coming on that situation, do you step in to help? And we were talking about the different things that could be done. And I said, well, if you, you know, have the ability to know how to restrain without harming, you know, okay. Because really what's happening here is a dehumanization. That the girl who attacked the other girl no longer considered that other girl to be human and therefore could just be treated despitefully because they didn't deserve to be treated well. And I think we have to be very careful when we insert ourselves into those situations that we then don't dehumanize the attacker because the attacker is still a human being. And I think the key thing is to recognize the treasure that is in each human being. So maybe what happens in that situation, maybe you use blessing there as well. Maybe you use prayer. Maybe you use something. But anger, strife, dissension, none of that is a solution. Because that just stirs more things up. When in fact we have a chance to live out the gospel at this point, especially in the light of wrongly being accused and physical violence, we have a chance to live out the gospel, the true gospel. And it's an amazing thing because if you would have asked me 6 months ago, 8 months ago, whether or not we would be in this position, this is unpredictable. But how quickly it has turned. But the good thing is, this isn't anything new. And in fact, you talk about a toxic environment. Jesus was in an extremely toxic environment, an extremely violent environment, a polarized environment. He was in all those things in far worse measure than we are. And yet he said on the Sermon on the Mount, turn the other cheek, go the extra mile. Why are you worried about getting the log out of your brother's eye? Look at the speck that's in your own first, and then you'll be able to see well enough. No, why are you worried about the speck in your brother's eye? Sorry. Why are you worried about the speck in your brother's eye when there's a log in your own? Get the log out of your eye so that you can help your brother with the speck. So Jesus was in the midst of a cruel, antagonistic, racist, whatever label you want to put on it, misogynistic environment. And yet he spoke of peace and love and joy in essence, of not striking back, of not seeking vengeance, of blessing those who curse us. This is our chance. This is amazing. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.